Welcome to Royally Screwed. My name is Chris Shearer, and it's my honor to take you on a tour through some of history's greatest, worst, and bizarre rulers. On this week's episode, we're back in Rome as we continue the saga of the first dynasty of the Roman Empire. Last time, we concluded the story of the penultimate Julio-Claudian emperor, Claudius. The stage is set for the fifth and final emperor of this famous group to begin his own reign that will see the foundations of Rome shaken once more, Emperor Nero. However, before we start to fully hone in on the mess that will be his life, let's put Nero on the bench for a second in order to discuss a very important figure of the imperial family, who will truly bridge the narrative from the end of Claudius's reign to Nero going full monster mode. This figure is none other than Claudius's final wife and niece, as well as Nero's mother, Agrippina. Fun fact about Agrippina at the top of the show, she was only one of two living women up to this point in our story to gain the title Augusta, the female version of the title for the Roman Emperor. Now, there were others given the title after their deaths, and while the other emperors had wives, some having several, none except for the wife of Augustus, Agrippina's great-grandmother Livia, were able to technically be called an empress. But along with that title means a very complicated legacy. You don't get to earn the title Augusta without making a few enemies, even posthumously. And boy, we'll really get to learn about Agrippina making some enemies. But perhaps that is a bit unfair on her end. I'll leave it up to you to decide at the end of the day whether she was actually a power-hungry empress or just a woman fighting through the political machinations of ancient Rome. We'll also take a brief look at the early days of Nero's reign. After all, he will be emperor throughout parts of this story. So without further ado, let's continue the story. We're going back in time to the Roman Empire in the 1st century CE in Mother Knows Best. I will always feel guilty about not actually devoting an entire episode of the Julio-Claudian saga to Empress Livia. So, in the background history lesson, let's take a closer look at Livia and the other important women who helped build up the Roman Empire in its early days. Livia was the daughter of a Roman praetor named Marcus Livius Drusus Claudianus. Her father was a very pro-republic figure who was against the reign of Julius Caesar, and would go on to fight against Augustus and Mark Antony alongside Caesar's assassins. Livius Drusus would end up taking his own life before he was able to be taken prisoner. This leaves Livia in a very strange situation, although it would be even more complicated than it initially appeared. At this time, Livia was married to her cousin, Tiberius Claudius Nero, and the pair had a son together, the future Emperor Tiberius. She was also pregnant with a second son, Drusus. So why did Augustus decide to go for an already married woman who happened to be the daughter of a man he had fought against in a brutal civil war? Well, it seems to have just truly been a case of love at first sight. It also helped that Livia already had a son. Augustus did not have any children at this point, although his only natural-born daughter, Julia, would be born soon enough after the pair met. Augustus forced Livia's husband to divorce her so that he could marry his future empress. As Empress of Rome, Livia quickly got to work helping her husband expand his realm of power by forming her own social network. She had hands in businesses all across the empire, from Italy to Judea, and the power to raise anyone to power she deemed worthy. Likewise, she could also theoretically do the exact opposite. Livia's legacy during Augustus's reign is that of a woman who would do anything to see her husband succeed, and then turn that desire into doing anything to get her son Tiberius chosen as the heir to Augustus's power. This included a wide range of alleged poisonings on Livia's part. Now, none of these poisonings can 100% be proven to have been done by Livia. Not even all of these poisonings can actually be said to be truly death by poison. It was ancient Rome. Forensic sciences weren't all that top-notch. And again, Livia would be painted in a poor light during the reign of Tiberius, as she was seen as overbearing. Livia is depicted as a woman who almost thought that she was actually in charge of Rome instead of her son. In a certain light, maybe she was. Livia was the widow of a man who had been deified upon his death. She still had numerous contacts throughout the empire. It was only when Tiberius truly put his foot down that Livia's powers started to be taken away. But even then, it's entirely possible that the empire might have been incredibly different if Livia was not around to help keep things in order. The whole imperial line would be drastically different if she had never been married to Augustus. Next up, we have Antonia Minor, the niece of Augustus. She would marry Tiberius's brother, Drusus. Antonia mostly played a background role for much of her life. For a while, it almost seemed like the most important thing she would do was give birth to Drusus's children. Granted, those children were very important, being Emperor Claudius, his sister Livilla, and Germanicus. Listen to episode 45 for his whole story. However, Antonia would later use the massive leverage she had as a blood relative of Augustus when Tiberius's reign started falling apart under the tyranny of Praetorian prefect Sejanus. Without her intervention, the empire might have collapsed under a new dictator when Tiberius decided to peace out to the island of Capri. When Gaius Germanicus, aka Caligula, was made emperor, he offered Antonia the title of Augusta, but she rejected the honors. Honestly, low-key a sleeper hit for the Julio-Claudian dynasty. And before we get into our Agrippina, known as Agrippina the Younger, we have to talk about her mother, Agrippina the Elder. She was granddaughter to Augustus and married to Germanicus. During her life, at least in the early days of Tiberius's reign, she was the pinnacle of womanhood in imperial life. She was a loving wife, a mother, which was at that point in time the most important, and able to stand up for herself when needed. She would later lead the splintering of the two factions of the Julio-Claudians, made up of Gens Julii and Gens Claudii, when she publicly stood up against Emperor Tiberius, accusing him of being behind the death of Germanicus. Because she was so beloved, it would end up taking a lot of political sway in order to see Agrippina the Elder put into exile, where she would later pass away. So, obviously, Agrippina the Younger has some big shoes to fill when it comes to powerful women in the early days of the Roman Empire. However, she definitely had the tenacity and political know-how to make a concerted effort in that department. So, let's now actually jump into the story of the last great woman of the Julio-Claudian dynasty. The early life of Agrippina the Younger isn't too dissimilar to what I've already covered in my episode about the early childhood of Emperor Gaius Germanicus. While the future emperor was born in Italy, Agrippina, born Julia Agrippina, was born in 15 CE in Germania, where her father was campaigning against the Germanic tribes. She was born in a Roman fort situated near what would eventually become the modern-day city of Cologne, Germany. Fun fact about Cologne, it's actually named after Agrippina. After the fort became a proper city, it was eventually called Colonia Claudia Ara Agrippinensium. It was usually just referred to as Colonia, which eventually became the German Köln. Unlike Gaius, though, Agrippina and the rest of her siblings would eventually be sent back to Italy, where they were raised by their grandmother, Antonia Minor. This period wouldn't last too long because in 18 CE, Germanicus was ordered to take control of things out east in Syria. Agrippina and the rest of her siblings would be going along for the journey. And unless this is your first episode, you'll know that things did not stay great for too long out east. In 19 CE, Germanicus died, and it very much seemed like he was poisoned. Agrippina the Elder moved her family back to Rome, where Agrippina the Younger and her siblings were now raised under the combined tutelage of their mother, Antonia Minor, and Empress Livia. That's a lot of powerful women teaching Agrippina during her early life. But once again, Agrippina's life would continue to spiral out of control as a very public feud developed between Agrippina the Elder and Emperor Tiberius. Things really started changing for Agrippina in 28 CE when Tiberius ordered that she be married to a man named Gnaeus Domitius Ahenobarbus. Now, if you did that math in your head correctly, yes, Agrippina was only 13 when she was married to Domitius. Her husband was 30 and also her father's cousin. Historians are very negative about Domitius. Suetonius even referred to him as a man hateful in every walk of life. Doesn't seem like the type of man I'd want anyone I care about married to. Besides the fact that the couple lived near the city of Rome, not too much is known about the state of their marriage. During the rest of the reign of Emperor Tiberius, Agrippina would see her family torn apart under the callous rulings of her adopted grandfather. Her mother and older brother Nero were sent into exile, where both would soon die afterwards, and her other brother Drusus would die in prison. Agrippina and her two younger sisters, Julia and Drusilla, were only spared from the worst fates because they were married off at such young ages. However, life would soon go on an upswing for Agrippina in the year 37 when two things happened. In March, Tiberius died and her brother Gaius was proclaimed the new emperor. In December, Agrippina and Domitius had a child together, and his name was Lucius Domitius Ahenobarbus. When Lucius, the boy who would grow up to be Emperor Nero, was born, his father, at least as said by Suetonius, said that no child sired by himself and Agrippina could be anything but trouble for the future of Rome. Which, like, dude, that's your son. Domitius was said to be an awful guy, but I feel like this maybe also says something about Agrippina. If he was so awful, what did she do to make him think of her like that? I know I said not much is known about the couple's marriage, but it seems like it really wasn't a good one. Granted, Suetonius also said that basically everyone seemed to have opinions based on the horoscope of Nero's birth that this child was doomed from the start. I don't believe in astrology, but that's also a wild thing to start throwing around for a kid who was just born. Now, did any of this actually happen? I would assume not, or at least not to this level. After Nero's death, every historian wanted to have their own spin on dissing the former emperor. But dire predictions of her son's future aside, Agrippina was actually in a pretty decent spot. Her brother was the new emperor, and he was very much letting everyone know that his sisters were just as important as him. Gaius gave his three sisters the same rights and prestige as those of the Vestal Virgins, the priestesses of the goddess Vesta, who were among some of the most respected women in Rome. Agrippina also appeared on some of the imperial coins, and vows made by politicians included swearing fealty to uphold the honor of both the emperor and his sisters. Things suddenly became not so alright when Agrippina's youngest sister, Drusilla, died in the summer of 38 CE. Her death had a shocking effect on Gaius Germanicus, and the relationship between him and his surviving sisters would never be the same. Things grew even worse as the emperor descended into a volatile state. Listen to episode 60 for that full story. In 39 CE, while out campaigning, Gaius Germanicus allegedly received word of a planned coup that was being led by his sisters and Drusilla's widower, Marcus Aemilius Lepidus, who, by the way, was potentially the emperor's boyfriend. When Gaius returned to Rome, he ordered for Lepidus to be executed and his sisters sent into exile. For almost 2 years, Agrippina and Julia lived on the island of Ponza, which is located just a few miles off the west coast of Italy. Meanwhile, the future Nero would live with his father before Domitius Ahenobarbus died in early 41 CE. Nero's uncle decided to step in and ordered the young boy be denied access to his inheritance. I mean, Nero was barely 3 at the time, so this probably wasn't a big deal for the toddler. In the meantime, he would live with his paternal aunt Domitia Lepida. But hey, at least Domitius is now out of the picture. The mother and the son were at their lowest points, though again, probably more so for Agrippina than young Nero, as Rome raged under the rule of Gaius Germanicus. But then, the emperor was assassinated in January of 41 CE, and the new emperor, Agrippina's uncle Claudius, was there to extend a helping hand. When Agrippina was recalled from exile by Claudius, she was reunited with her son. Under the new emperor, Nero's inheritance was returned to him. Around the same time, his paternal aunt's husband, a man named Pacianus Crispus, divorced Nero's aunt in order to marry Agrippina. Crispus was a fairly well-to-do man, as he would end up being named consul of Rome twice and proconsul, aka governor, of Roman Asia, aka Western Turkey. Well, Crispus would end up passing away in 47 CE due to unknown causes. The ancient rumor of the day was that Agrippina had poisoned her husband so that her son would receive an even larger inheritance. Despite being a member of the royal family though, Agrippina decided to take a step back from the spotlight during the beginning of Claudius's reign. You see, Claudius was then currently married to a woman named Valeria Messalina, one of Rome's most insufferable divas of the day. Messalina decided to have a very public feud with Agrippina's sister, which resulted in the emperor's wife ordering Claudius to once more send Livilla into exile, where she would later pass away after Claudius ordered her to execution via starvation. With one of Claudius's nieces out of the way, Messalina turned her eyes on Agrippina. Well, technically, Messalina wasn't turning her ire on Agrippina, but the latter's son. Messalina was the mother of Claudius's only son, Britannicus. In young Nero, Messalina saw a threat to the succession line. Claudius was very much looking to heal the rift that had formed and deepened in the Julio-Claudian family ever since his uncle had caused the death of Agrippina's family. Messalina was worried that Claudius's olive branch would eventually see Nero seated on the throne. Yeah, kind of ironic that this would in fact be the case. But we'll get to that in a bit. Apparently, Messalina would go on to hire mercenaries to murder Agrippina's son. Which, like, Nero would be around 10 years old at this point. That's going way too far. However, the would-be assassins, according to historian Tacitus, didn't kill Nero because when they got to his bedside, they saw a snake curled around his arm and freaked out. Also, according to Tacitus, this snake was actually just dead skin a snake had previously shed that Agrippina made Nero wear as a bracelet. Now, I have a pet snake. Her sheds look nothing like a real snake, so those mercenaries kinda sucked if they couldn't see the difference. Messalina would eventually go too far with her bad behavior and was put to death in 48 CE. In the aftermath, Claudius's advisors gave him a list of women who were options to be his next wife. Oddly enough, Agrippina was on that list. And Claudius would go on to choose Agrippina as his next wife. Okay, yeah, I know the Julio-Claudian bloodline was already a bit weirdly incestuous, but that was usually with, like, second cousins and cousins once removed. I'm not saying those are necessarily fine still, but, like, it's not uncle and niece. And yes, even in 48 CE, this was considered pretty taboo. It's around now that we see Agrippina take a shift in her role with imperial politics. If Agrippina wasn't looking to get Nero on the throne when Messalina was Claudius's wife, she almost certainly was now. She quickly took advantage of the fact that Claudius would do anything to seem like he had full control of Rome. And that's not to say that he didn't. Claudius was a perfectly fine emperor, but he wasn't actually willing to make hard decisions like his predecessors, especially when it came to protecting the safety of his family. Agrippina began devising a plan that would make her son the most logical heir to the throne. She had one of her brother's surviving ex-wives put to death and called off the marriage of Claudius's daughter so that she could be married to her son, aka Claudia Octavia's stepbrother. She would be adopted by a different family so that this would technically be legal in the eyes of the law. In 50 CE, Agrippina moved a step further in her plans when she finally managed to convince her husband to adopt Lucius. And, as we know, upon his adoption, Lucius's name was changed to Nero Claudius. That same year, Agrippina was named Augusta, Empress of Rome. Nero would marry Claudia Octavia in 53 CE. By this point, he had been made a prominent member of the royal family and gave plenty of public speeches, you know, despite only being 16 years old. Agrippina, as Augusta, gained even more influence over her husband and the empire as a whole. It seemed as if Agrippina's influence had caused Claudius to take a liking to Nero, possibly even to the point where Nero would truly be the emperor's heir. However, in 54 CE, it seemed like Claudius started having a change of heart. He began to prepare for Britannicus to begin the Roman ceremonies of adulthood, which would seemingly place Claudius's natural-born son as his true heir. Now, we don't actually know how Claudius died, but the prevailing theory is that Agrippina poisoned him. This could be true, or Claudius could have died in any number of other ways. We'll probably never know the whole truth. But because Britannicus was technically not an adult at the time of his father's death, Nero was proclaimed the new emperor of Rome. However, he was still too young to rule in his own right. He was only 16 years old, meaning the true power of the throne was held by Agrippina. She quickly got to work having anyone who would be perceived as a political rival to her son exiled or put to death. This included family members and former servants of Claudius. Without allies, it seemed like Britannicus would be pushed completely out of the picture, but he did manage to stick around for a while. In the first few months of his time as Augustus, Nero made attempts to undermine Britannicus when Nero's own mother told him that Britannicus possibly could have been a better choice as heir. This was a tactic by Agrippina to make sure Nero listened to her. Nero hired a man named Locusta, who was said to be a master poisoner. Some stories have Agrippina hiring him to poison Claudius. With Locusta's help, Nero poisoned his stepbrother at a dinner party. When people first went to help Britannicus, Nero stopped them, insisting that Britannicus was simply having an epileptic seizure. Not that seizures are something to be taken lightly. However, Nero may have been correct. The poison story is possibly post-mortem slander against the emperor, and Britannicus may have indeed died due to a seizure. Either way, the only natural-born son of Claudius was dead the day before his 14th birthday. There were no more rivals to the imperial throne. But despite all this, Nero's early reign was actually a fresh breath of air for Rome, especially the Senate. Gaius Germanicus had treated the Senate like a circus. Claudius was a bit paranoid and thought himself smarter than most senators. Tiberius was... well, he just wasn't there. Nero's early proclamations praised the Senate and showed respect to their autonomy as a political body. Everything seemed to be going smoothly as Agrippina held the power of the empire in her hands while Nero was the face for the people. And Rome seemed to fully acknowledge this balance of power. The empress appeared on official coinage. There's even a famous statue that was carved during the first few years of Nero's reign that shows Agrippina crowning Nero, which is a major political statement when you think about it. But then, Nero met a girl, and teenager hormones changed everything. Her name was Claudia Acta. Claudia had once been a slave either of Emperor Claudius or his daughter, aka Nero's wife, but was now a freed woman. This means that Nero probably knew of her for quite some time. But here's the thing. The reason that Nero decided to take on Claudia Acta was because he was encouraged to do so from his two closest advisors, Seneca, a politician, and Burrus, prefect of the Praetorian Guard. Seneca believed that Nero wasn't satisfied in his marriage to Claudia Octavia. The couple would eventually get divorced, but that wouldn't be for several more years. With the thought that Nero's dissatisfaction would lead to more perverse sexual desires, Seneca recognized that Claudia Acta was a good outlet for Nero's extramarital pursuits. However, the relationship needed to be kept a secret, especially from Agrippina. Seneca and Burrus were becoming increasingly uneasy with the emperor's mother and her penchant for constantly being around and advising her son on how to rule. It was also written about by ancient historians that there were rumors Agrippina was making sexual advances towards her own son in order to keep him in line. Soon enough, it was clear that the emperor was head over heels for Claudia Acta. Despite being married, he would confide with his advisors and friends that he wanted to marry his mistress. He even started talking with other politicians, especially those who had previously served as consuls of Rome, to think about swearing fealty to Claudia. It was around this time that Agrippina learned about the affair her son was having. As you would probably guess, this made her absolutely furious. She became even more overbearing as it was becoming more and more apparent that Nero was growing independent. Eventually, in 56 CE, Nero ordered that his mother would no longer be able to participate in the political scene within the imperial palace, though she was still allowed to live in the residence of the emperor. As Agrippina continued to battle against her son, Nero began removing Agrippina's various powers and titles, though he was never able to stop her from being called Augusta. It got to the point where Nero was so fed up with everything that he threatened to abdicate the throne of the emperor if his mother did not stop her controlling behavior. With Nero out of power, Agrippina would also lose her control in Rome. While this obviously never ended up happening, it also didn't seem to stop Agrippina's behavior. Then enter yet another mistress, Poppaea Sabina. Poppaea soon eclipsed Nero's feelings for Claudia Acta, though she would very much remain in the picture for the rest of Nero's reign. He just never actually got married to her or officially had any children with her. While Claudia had been someone chosen by Nero's advisors and very much knew what her relationship was with the emperor, Poppaea was a woman who had ulterior motives. It's believed that she even married her husband, Marcus Salvius Otho, who would later go on to become an emperor after Nero, by the way, just so she could get closer to Nero. This plan succeeded as Nero eventually started having an affair with Poppaea. Eventually, she would go on to divorce Otho so she could fully place her attention on the affair with Nero. Well, when Agrippina found out that her son had started up an affair with yet another woman, things really went to hell. What happens next is entirely left up to which ancient historian you decide to trust. I'll begin with Tacitus's account since that easily continues from where I left off. According to him, Poppaea constantly teased Nero that he was under the control of Agrippina. On top of that, Agrippina discovered the extramarital relationship her son was having and divulged it to the imperial court. While she may have been hoping that this would make Nero run back to her and apologize, it unfortunately had the opposite result. Nero was dead set on marrying Poppaea, and also divorcing Claudia Octavia for that matter. Poppaea knew this, and also knew that the marriage could never go through as long as Agrippina still lived. With this in mind, she convinced Nero that Agrippina needed to die. That way, they could get married and Nero could have full control over his empire. After a failed attempt to sink a ship Agrippina was sailing in, Nero hired several assassins to murder his mother. According to Suetonius, Agrippina's assassination was all Nero's idea. He also tells the story of how Nero attempted to sink Agrippina's boat, so I guess that much is probably true, or at least was considered the truth by the time he and Tacitus were writing. Suetonius also mentions that Nero tried poisoning his mother several times. When all this failed, Nero planned a somewhat convoluted series of events. First, he ordered one of his bodyguards to drop a dagger behind one of Agrippina's most trusted freedmen. He then had this freedman put to death for planning to assassinate the emperor. After the man's execution, Nero hired an assassin to kill his mother. He had the assassin stage Agrippina's death so that it would seem as if she committed suicide after a failed attempt to stage a coup against her son. Cassius Dio also talks about the boat story, but this time he says that Nero designed the bottom of the boat to fall apart while the ship was at sea. When Agrippina survived the ordeal, he hired an assassin to kill his mother. When she was confronted with death, Agrippina allegedly ordered the assassin to smite my womb, as she wanted to destroy the part of her that gave birth to Nero. No matter whose story you believe, Julia Agrippina, Augusta of Rome, died in March of 59 CE. She was cremated and laid to rest in a grave that would never be completed while Nero lived. Apparently, he believed he was haunted by his mother's ghost for the remainder of his life. However, that didn't stop him from divorcing Claudia Octavia and marrying Poppaea Sabina. The pair were married after Poppaea became pregnant in 62 CE. Upon the birth of his daughter, named Claudia Augusta, Nero bestowed the same title upon his second wife, making her the third living Augusta of the Roman Empire. But without Agrippina's guiding hand in his ruling, whether that was actually for better or worse for Nero's own well-being, the empire would enter into a spiral it would not be able to escape until the Julio-Claudians were removed from power. But for now, that's it for this week's episode of Royally Screwed. I hope you enjoyed the journey. Be sure to subscribe to the show and tell a friend all about it. Next episode, we're back to exploring the possible true history behind King Arthur. There will be two candidates for the historical Arthur this time around. One is a King of the Britons, but the other is King of the Irish? I hope you'll join me then for another topsy-turvy look into history's most interesting rulers.